You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Native American tribes have been hit with a 1-2 punch, the opioid epidemic and the coronavirus pandemic. Tribal nations are struggling with a high rate of overdose coupled with the COVID-19 pandemic, and addressing these crises is costly. And the economic devastation from COVID has shut down hundreds of tribally owned casinos, wreaking havoc on tribal budgets. Are you a member of a tribal nation? Did your tribe receive rapid testing from Indian Health Service? Are there enough tests to go around? We're at 800-642-1234. Tehasi Hill is chairman of the Oneida Nation. Chairman Hill, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. I'm glad I could be here today.
Well, take us to the Oneida Nation Reservation, which is within Brown County, which has been a hotspot for the coronavirus. How are you addressing COVID-19 in the Oneida Nation?
Well, I think first and foremost, we're paying close attention as this was starting to break the news in the early part of the year. And as far as back as, you know, January, we were already starting to contemplate shutting down some of our larger meetings that we were planned to have in March and end up taking that action to cancel those general tribal council meetings where regularly we get between 1,500 and 1,800 tribal members in a pretty confined space to hold a meeting. And so we had taken that those actions early on to cancel those because of the spread of the coronavirus. And, you know, and we've also been heeding the advice of our public health officials and health officials, CDC and WEDC, for making sure that businesses and programs and services that are open are making sure that we're doing that as safely as possible.
What have you seen with the spread, with the number of cases in the Oneida Nation?
Well, I guess generally overall our numbers, we have about 55 positive cases as of yesterday. We had two deaths about a month ago now, an older gentleman and a younger woman. And currently we have about 4 or 5 individuals currently in isolation.
How is the Oneida Community Health Services Department responding to the situation?
They also responded, you know, quite well, and had recommendations put forth right away that our business committee had considered and took up. And so they had kind of immediately put a halt to kind of regularly scheduled doctor's appointments, you know, annual physicals and well child checkups and things like that, that to make sure that the healthy people weren't coming in and being in close proximity to people who could potentially have the virus.
From what I understand, the Oneida Nation is still under a state of emergency declaration and a safer at home order extending until August 11th. Is that right?
Yes, that is right. We just last week kind of reauthorized another 30 days of the public health emergency, and that's a part of our Homeland Security emergency management law that we have in place here at Oneida that authorizes for 30-day increments. And so looking at the advice from our health officials, they're saying that since March that this definitely is going to be somewhere into 3 to 6 months of trying to deal with this pandemic kind of initially, I guess, for the first wave. And so it's likely we'll be continuing to have a public health emergency in 30-day increments until until a vaccine is developed and that's safe for everyone to utilize, or until it starts going away when people start heeding the advice of the CDC and public health officials to mask and stay home and social distance.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Tehasi Hill. He's chairman of the Oneida Nation. We're looking at how the pandemic is affecting his community. And you can join in. Are you a member of a tribal community here in Wisconsin? How have you proceeded during this pandemic? Are you under an emergency and doing a safer at home order? Join in at 800-642-1234. Chairman Hill, this morning in preparation, I was watching your State of the Tribes address from last year and thinking about how difficult it must be, because at that time you were telling lawmakers that the opioid epidemic was the central destructive force that was really hitting tribal communities. How are you looking at the epidemic now in the face of COVID?
Yeah, things have been changing, you know, quite a bit, and in consultation with our health officials as well, they're kind of changing how treatment and counseling are taking place, obviously with trying to reduce the amount of, you know, face-to-face close contacts. A lot of the treatments and consult have been over the phone, telehealth
yeah,
or video conferencing in, to still try to meet the needs of our community, especially when it comes to mental health.
What is unemployment like right now?
Currently, we're still sitting for Oneida Nation's employment level itself at about 50%.
And what does that mean, sitting at 50%? How is that affecting families?
Yeah, it definitely is. We've taken action to try to mitigate those negative aspects of being, you know, furloughed or laid off. So through our tribal housing programs, we've authorized for kind of a forgiveness for rents and mortgages to make sure that families can stay in their homes and put a halt to any foreclosures also during this time. So, and also utility, our water and sewer utility bills have also been at this point still forgiven at this point. So we're trying to, reduce those costs to our membership to make sure that they can stay in their homes and that they have continued access to, safe water and sewer.
What is the timeline for those actions? I mean, you must be looking out in the distance and saying, how can we afford to do this and for how many months?
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, what we're currently dealing with, obviously, with our main revenue driver, gaming, being shut down for a couple of months and then having a slow, steady start. Our revenues aren't where, obviously, they're projected to be for this time of year. And so that is kind of the quandary that we're trying to deal with on a daily basis, is figuring out how to work all this programs and services and keeping our community safe. And in doing so, it's really kind of compounded as well by the CARES Act and other federal funding that, you know, specific language in those bills that are those laws that do not allow for certain activities. So for like the CARES Act, we can't use that money for anything that we had budgeted for. So if we had budgeted programs and services for utility assistance or, you know, whatever it might have been, we cannot use that CARES money for that particular program. So, you know,
what has been the role of the federal government aid as you see it to date?
Well, I guess so far for this pandemic, you know, I can definitely say really good things about the Indian Health Service, IHS. They have been very willing to meet and have teleconferences regularly, weekly teleconferences, and to get our communities testing supplies and PPE on a regular basis, and so they really stepped up to the plate to uphold, you know, their end of the federal government's responsibility to, you know, Native tribes across the country.
How can you use the stimulus aid then from the CARES Act?
Well, primarily, we're currently just reimbursing for a lot of the additional costs due to COVID. So, you know, specific cleaning supplies that are obviously antiviral, and then things that we had put in place for our retail enterprises and gaming enterprises for the plexiglass barriers for the cashiers and the workers in retail, and then to kind of create a shroud, I guess, around the slot machines and at the tables as well. So we've United Nations spent about, you know, $500,000 on safety equipment and supplies.
Are you worried that some of your programs, where the dollars aren't flowing into these programs, that you're going to either have to do layoffs or disband programs?
Yeah, that's pretty much what we are currently going through right now with our current revenue projections, and seeing where that puts us by the end of, you know, the next fiscal year. Right now, we run on a fiscal year that ends on or begins October 1, so we only have a couple of months left of this fiscal year to day by day, and then for the next fiscal year, looking at those revenue projections and the costs of employment and programs and services, figuring out where we land at the end of next year to really try to figure out if more cuts are needed.
We're talking with Oneida Nation Chairman Tehasi Hill and the work of First Nations to provide services amid the pandemic as revenue streams, as we've been hearing, from gaming operations dry up. Are you a member of a tribal nation? Do you work at a tribal-owned casino? Are you out of work? Is the casino open with precautions in place? How is your health and the health of your community? Join in with your questions, your insights, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with the Oneida Nation Chairman right here on the Ideas Network. We have the chairman of the Oneida Nation, Tehasi Hill, here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Indian Health Service, or IHS, has distributed around $31 million to our state's 11 tribes as part of $1 billion awarded to the federal agency under the federal coronavirus aid response. Tribal health advocates want lawmakers to provide more funding for IHS to help tribes with the coronavirus response in its next relief package. How is your tribal government navigating the impact of COVID? What vital services are running short on funding? And where is help needed the most? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. And Chairman Hill stays with us. Chairman, the National Indian Gaming Association recently said that gaming is what the tribes largely survive on, and that in a lot of cases, quote, if we don't have gaming, we don't have dollars. How has the pandemic impacted this for the Oneida Nation?
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely the case for Oneida and many, the vast majority of, I think, the tribal nations across the country. And I think it's kind of like similar to, you know, everyday life of living paycheck to paycheck. So, you know, every week gaming facilities deposit money into the bank account on Sunday or Monday, whatever it might, the specific day might be. And then that money is quickly doled out in payroll and in other expenses, you know, later that week or the next week. So it is, most tribes were put in a pretty precarious position once those dollars stopped flowing in. And I guess at Oneida, I guess we were fortunate to have a relatively small, you know, amount of reserves saved for in case of a rainy day, but definitely not enough to fund our programs and services and employment for an entire year or anything like that. And I think that's ultimately what the a new goal is going to be.
What is the status of your gaming operations?
So currently we opened up in two phases. So about a month ago, 5 or so weeks, We opened up phase one, which just allowed about 40%, I believe, of the slot machines, 40-50% of the slot machines. So to allow for social distancing on the gaming floor, essentially it was every other machine was essentially roped off so and rendered inoperable so that people couldn't have the opportunity to sit, you know, side by side, you know, within a foot or two of each other. So that definitely has been, I guess, the main thing that is slow to allow revenue come back.
What precautions are you taking with employees at these facilities?
Yep, so precautions at the facilities is masks are required for both employees and patrons, and we install plexiglass for protective barriers, and sanitizing is done, you know, around the clock. Currently, our operations, I believe, shut down from 4 a.m. till 8 a.m. for a deep cleaning, but we also have, obviously, custodians roving, you know, throughout the business hours, wiping machines down and taking care of that sanitization.
Even with limited capacity, have you seen patrons return?
Yes, patrons, you know, have returned, and I think the hopeful thing for us is that the numbers are a little bit better than we anticipated, so that I think we're on the right path, and as long as we can continue to provide a safe environment for people to get that entertainment that they're seeking, that we hope that we continue to have patrons visit us.
Last week, our show Central Time talked with Ernie Stevens III, another member of the Oneida Nation, about the tribe's experiment with hemp production. Are you looking at alternative sources of revenue like hemp production?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's something that's been, you know, on the table for a while. I've been a strong supporter of kind of diversifying the tribe's revenue streams, and I think agriculture has always been one of the areas that I continue to focus on, and in particular, I guess, industrial hemp could be a good product and food source, and it has, you know, thousands of uses. So, you know, anything we can do in a small bit or a large bite, I think, is important to make sure that our finances are in order.
Yeah, how long are you, you know, into this journey of finding whether this could be a reliable revenue stream?
Well, last year was our first growing season with it, and so that was a lot of, I guess, R&D into last year, trying a couple different different seeds and planting locations, and also, I guess, the maintenance of it. You know, is it a row crop or is it best for a greenhouse? You know, things like that. So, and last year wasn't a very good growing year to begin with for any of the agricultural products. So that was kind of hopefully being a blip on the radar of continuing to do the research and development.
We're talking with Tehasi Hill. He's chairman of the Oneida Nation. We're looking at how the pandemic is affecting tribal communities, and with your questions as well, 800-642-1234. Chairman Hill, I want to turn to the Supreme Court in Oklahoma for a moment. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled this last week that much of the eastern half of Oklahoma falls within Native American territory. It's been called a very important ruling. What does this decision mean?
Yes, I think it also has ramifications right here in Wisconsin as well, and through different tribes throughout the country. Sometimes municipalities or cities or villages or even states have argued that tribal reservations were disestablished or abolished by the Allotment Act. And this is clearly not the case. Both federal court systems and the Supreme Courts over the years have really made that distinction that they have not, and yet we still have to face these types of lawsuits again and again. And so hopefully with this last Supreme Court ruling that that hopefully that fight has finally been put to bed so that we can continue moving forward and trying to build better relationships between our within our states and within our communities.
How is the status, the strength of tribal sovereignty honored here in Wisconsin?
Well, I think there's always room for improvement, but I think under the current Governor Evers' administration, he's really been there for the tribes to have regular consultation with and meetings with. I think that's been very helpful, especially going through this public health pandemic, making sure that his secretaries are available to answer questions or, you know, provide input as we try to navigate this new time.
In our last minute we have together, I'm wondering, in this time of such uncertainty, where do you personally find hope?
Well, I really find hope in that, you know, our families and our communities are really, you know, sticking together and trying to keep each other safe and following those precautions. And for us, I think that's definitely a shining part of this pandemic is how our community has responded and been respectful of the recommendations for public health and safety, you know, one masking, staying safer at home, and washing your hands and making sure that your loved ones are safe.
You feel like the community has really heeded those public health precautions and taken them to heart.
Yeah, I definitely do. I think part of the Oneida Reservation, you know, straddles, I guess, Brown and Outagamie counties, you know, with Brown County being one of the hottest spots in the state and arguably the country, that for a time there, that our cases being what they are, sitting at about 55, I think, is a testament to that.
Chairman Hill, thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. So glad to be here.
Tehasi Hill is chairman of the Oneida Nation. Just ahead, the pandemic hasn't stopped all summer camps from operating. We learn how they're doing it and how schools could take a page out of their book in the fall. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.